It's a joy to be with you this morning, and I'm grateful for Pastor Jim's invitation to preach. We first met in 1982 at Luther Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota. Jim and Felicia invited Barb and me over to their apartment for dinner, and we've been close friends ever since as our families have continued to grow with children and now grandchildren. We've had many occasions over these past almost 30 years since Pastor Jim has come to visit and worship and celebrate with you. And in addition, it's really great to reconnect with friends from Sammamish Hills Lutheran Church who we were together in the 1990s and who have now moved to Whidbey Island and call Trinity Lutheran Church home. Well, since Pastor Jim is not here today, I guess I'm free to tell stories. One of my favorites is the time soon before seminary graduation when we decided that it would be a good idea if we would go out and we would buy suits, as we were going to soon be interviewing and meeting with churches that we might be serving. And so one of our seminary classmates, Eric, worked at a fancy suit shop just down the street from the seminary, better known as J.C. Penney. And he came back and reported to us that they were having a two-for-one sale. Two suits for the price of one. And better yet, it could be two different buyers. And so off Jim and I went to get fitted. Boy, did we look sharp, or so did Eric tell us. I think he worked on commission. Well, I wore my suit first. It was actually for a very sad occasion at the funeral of a friend. A few weeks later, seminarian Jim was traveling with his suit out here to Washington, to Bainbridge Island, and as he got ready to put it on Sunday morning to greet the congregation, he realized that the sleeves only went about two-thirds of the way down his arm, and I think the pant legs were not the right size either. Apparently, I had worn his suit and not even noticed. And as you would expect, though, Pastor Jim deftly handled the embarrassment, told the congregation they'd be in good hands, and he received the call. And soon afterwards, both of us moved out to Washington State in 1986, and we came out with our correct suits when we did so. Well, while Pastor Jim has continued to serve as a faithful pastor here almost 30 years, for the past 19 years, I've been working with churches and other faith organizations on stewardship and capital campaigns. In between, I had about a seven-year time where I was serving at Pacific Lutheran University in the Office of Advancement. And throughout that experience, I've enjoyed the joy of giving that people experience and how they can grow in faith even as they grow in generosity and they support the churches and the ministries that are important to them. Trinity is a very generous congregation, and so I want to say thank you for that. You support so many ministries, both locally and literally around the globe, including those is our Synod campaign, which is called Because of You, what I'm working on with the Northwest Washington Synod. And so the campaign has two main goals. One is to support our common ministries together here in the Pacific Northwest. We know that there's a sea change going on in our culture. Less people are coming to church. And so we continue to ask the question, what is God up to in our world? And how can we be faithful in sharing the gospel for our children and our grandchildren for future generations? And so collectively, we've started new ministries around the Synod, perhaps for people that speak a primary language other than English, or for different demographics as our population continues to change, as well as equipping our churches, faithful churches like Trinity. It's because of you that the gospel continues to be shared. That's why we chose that theme. And so equipping churches to think and consider how we can be effective in our communities and our neighborhoods. Well, in addition to supporting these congregations, we want to support our new church leaders. When Pastor Jim and I went to seminary, there were many, many people that were coming at that time. That's no longer the case. There are less people, less students that are starting. And one of the reasons people think is because of financial barriers. About 80% of our seminary graduates have debt from their theological education. It takes an undergraduate degree, but then another 4 years normally of seminary. And the church as a whole used to pay for that as tuition, but as times have changed, has not been able to. And so most of our seminarians are carrying that debt and coming out with an average of $54,000 of debt. It's hard for them then to answer calls to serve congregations and for congregations to afford that. So we're helping in terms of seminary scholarships on the front end and on debt reduction for some of our young leaders or newer leaders as pastors and deacons as they come out and begin to serve. So again, say thank you to you at Trinity Lutheran Church for your support, for because of you and in many ways and the ministries that you support all over the world. Well, today's gospel is called the story of the transfiguration, meaning a change in form, and the story starts out ordinary enough. Jesus walks up onto a mountain with three of his disciples. That was pretty typical. He often would go off by himself or with a few close disciples. We don't know for sure, but we think it might have been nighttime, for according to Luke, the disciples have a difficult time staying awake, although that wasn't so unusual either. They sometimes had trouble staying focused, but there's nothing routine about the rest of the experience. No sooner did they get to the mountain, but Jesus is transfigured. Somehow his form has changed. He looks different. His face is radiant. And not only does he change appearance, but we are told that he is speaking to Moses and Elijah, great religious leaders who had died centuries prior. A cloud hovers over the mountain, and the disciples are petrified. A cloud meant the awesome power and majesty of God was present in that place. There was a cloud that hovered over Mount Sinai when Moses received the commandments. And there was a cloud that hovered over the Jordan River when Jesus was baptized. And they heard those words, "This is my son, my beloved, listen to him." Well, a changed appearance, visits from the dead, a voice from heaven. Now, I don't know about you, but most of my days aren't nearly that exciting. In fact, by comparison, most seem quite ordinary and uneventful. We go through our familiar schedules and our routines in life. These days, a good part of even a routine for me is flying back and forth quite a bit between here in the Pacific Northwest and in Minnesota. And even in these days of tight security and long lines, I still enjoy getting on airplanes, especially when it's a cloudy day, and lifting up through the clouds and then breaking through and seeing that brilliant blue sky. I don't even like to pull down my shades like most people do these days, and to see and feel the radiance of the sun. You get a new perspective at 35,000 feet. The world looks different from that vantage point. And the sun is still there, I'm reminded, even though I couldn't see it while I was on the ground. Just this past Friday, early morning, I boarded the plane from the frozen tundra of Minnesota, and then soon, 3 hours later, descended over the beautiful Cascade Mountains covered with snow and saw the beautiful Olympic Mountains in the distance looking over the water. Once again, I was overwhelmed by the brilliance and the majesty of God's creation. Creation is one of the ways that we experience the awesomeness of God. Another way is in our shared experiences with one another. For a number of summers during high school and college, I worked as a counselor at a Bible camp. The campers would arrive on Sunday afternoon, all ready to go for the week. And as the week progressed and amid a lot of fun and games and singing, they hopefully had a chance to grow in faith. The week reached a crescendo on Friday evening. We had our best dinner of the week, chicken and mashed potatoes and gravy, a special evening activity, and then it was time for the final campfire. We sang our favorite songs from the week, and once outside under a sky filled with more stars than most of us had ever seen, we gazed across the lake at the cross. And in those days, the climatic song was "Pass It On." There were often tears of emotion of the moment for having to say goodbye to newfound friends. There were promises to keep in touch and to write, This was in the days before email or texting. For most campers, it was a mountaintop experience of the week and one many would remember for the rest of their lives. But then Saturday morning arrived, a short night of sleep, and there were mundane chores of packing suitcases and cleaning the cabins and boarding the bus for the long ride home to their hometowns. Back to the reality, but still carrying the memories of that week with them. People surveyed in churches will often point to a camp experience or attendance at a youth gathering as one of the most memorable points of their faith journey. They're important mountaintop experiences in our lives of faith. They can remind us of the power and the majesty of God, flying through the clouds in the sunlight, sitting around a campfire, gazing up in the nighttime sky, experiencing the birth of a child, reminders of the wonder and majesty of God's creation. We savor those moments in life. They lift our spirits. We gain a new perspective. But in the end, the experiences don't last, nor do they save us. They come our way, but they're not meant to be our ultimate goal. For in the midst of that mysterious and terrifying encounter on the mountain, Peter wants to build three shelters, one for Jesus, one for Moses, one for Elijah. Let's just stay here and bask in this glory. But that was not to be. Jesus knew it couldn't last. Only 8 days prior, he had talked to them about taking up a cross and about traveling to Jerusalem. At the time, they did not understand what he meant. It was after that shining moment on the mountain that Jesus would descend and make his way towards Jerusalem. And we hear in today's gospel that the first thing that happens is he encounters a man whose son is possessed by a demon. Back to the nitty-gritty realities of life. This Sunday of Transfiguration is a pivotal time in our church year. One last flash of glory before we begin the season of Lent with Ash Wednesday, a time when we focus on the journey to the cross, a season when we remember that not all of life is hopping from one peak to another, earth to earth, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, as the sign is made upon our foreheads. The gravity of our mortality pulls us back down from heaven to earth. Unexpected medical emergencies and hospitalizations, family relationships gone awry, the pain of infertility, bouts with depression, the loss of a loved one, move to an Alzheimer's unit, households on the brink of financial ruin. And in the macro picture, we wonder what's happening to our country, to our world, to the earth. Even our current predicament as a church, as we struggle and feel like we're walking around in the dark trying to figure out how do we be faithful and how do we do ministry in today's world, not knowing where we are headed. In a podcast called On Being, Krista Tippett interviews Old Testament professor Walter Brueggemann, who reflects, "The world we have trusted in is vanishing before our eyes, and the world coming to us is a threat to us, and we can't quite see the shape of it. This is where the church and preachers have to live. Our consumer culture wants to narcotize us so that we just settle in on things, but we will miss out on both the loss and the newness." For the disciples, that mysterious encounter on the mountain was a gift. The radiance of Jesus was something that they could remember even as they faced the dark days to come as he made his way towards Jerusalem and the cross. For in the end, after all the commotion and the special guests were gone, the gospel tells us that it was Jesus alone standing there. True meaning was not found in the mountain. It was found in the relationship with the one who still remained with them, the one who gives us strength to move forward in faith instead of being paralyzed by fear. Many of you are PLU alumni or have family members that are, and some of you will remember Dr. Richard Mole. Yesterday I attended a celebration of life, a memorial service for him on the campus. And Barb and I had the benefit of knowing Dick and Marsha long after he retired from PLU, as they're members of our same church, St. Mark's by the Narrows in Tacoma, and so we have coffee together on Sundays after worship many times. Dick had an incredible zest for life, so much positivity, so much enthusiasm as he embraced it, which was quite remarkable considering that many years ago his first wife, Lila, had been brutally murdered in a robbery in their home. Surely Dick knew the darkest days one could ever imagine. And yet in spite of, or maybe because of those days, he lived with hope. He continued to embrace life. He was a light to so many others. Next weekend, we're looking forward to celebrating our granddaughter's second birthday, granddaughter Nora. The day after she was born, the pediatrician came in and was concerned about her eyes. And she was sent to a specialist, and within about 10 days, she was flown with her parents to the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota. They had lived at Missoula at the time. Nora was born with a cloud over her part of her eyes. And if a cloud is over the pupil and the light cannot get in to the optic nerve, blindness happens and vision cannot develop. Well, the surgeons miraculously were able to cut some of those strands to recenter the pupil so there's enough light to pass around the cloud that still Nora has on her eyes. And as a result, her vision continues to develop. She wears a patch on her good eye for a few hours each day, and she wears glasses already. Her parents, before they knew any of this was going to happen, named her Nora, which means light. One of my favorite activities is to read to Nora, including the book Goodnight Moon, and then we look out in the sky to see if we can find the moon reflecting the light of the sun. In her book, Learning to Walk in the Dark, Barbara Brown Taylor reflects on what we might learn while living in darkness, both literally and metaphorically. And she uses the phases of the moon in considering how darkness speaks to us. And when she gets to that phase of no moon, when there's no moon to be seen, she writes, "Even the man in the moon is blind tonight. His light's put out for three whole nights while the world blocks the light of the sun. I always wondered why it took 3 days for significant things to happen in the Bible. Jonah spent 3 days in the belly of the whale. Jesus spent 3 days in the tomb. Paul spent 3 days blind in Damascus. And now I know. From earliest times, people learned that was how long they had to wait in the dark before the sliver of the new moon appeared in the sky. For 3 days every month, they practiced resurrection." Easter comes late this year, April 21, but Easter is always set by the moon, the first full moon after the spring equinox on March 21. Most of us recognize that there are ups and downs in life, highs and lows, mountaintops and valleys. Often our inclination is to look for light, and indeed that's the promise, that in the end there will be resurrection. A friend and colleague died recently, and prior to his death, he shared with me that he had had a near-death experience, and he had seen light. And after that, he was not afraid. It was a comfort to him and to his family. God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And Jesus said, "I am the light of the world." And yet we know that he spent time in darkness, in a cave or a manger at birth, in the Garden of Gethsemane, in a dark tomb for 3 days, and God was still present. That is the promise, that even in the midst of the clouds, even in the midst of the fog of our lives, even in the challenges that we have, that God is still there with us. Even as Nora still has a cloud over part of her eyes, even when we walk in the shadow of death, God is there, not always with answers, but with hope and promise. And often that hope and that promise is experienced for our love and the care and presence of one another. We're expecting our second grandchild, and we're already aware that there will be challenges for this little one as well, totally unrelated to Nora's. She's already had a fetal surgery that's been performed at Mayo to keep fluid away from her lungs so her lungs can develop now at 29 weeks. It's been tough to watch our kids go through this and the stress that they've endured. This is what my wife Barb wrote in the darkness of a night when she could not sleep after our experience in the hospital and the weeks that have followed. I search for words to fix this, to change this, to provide hope. Where are they? I stare blankly across the waiting room and time stands still. A young couple enters the room. They appear tired but elated at the same time. They are heading home with their baby after a long hospital stay. They will meet one more time with the support group before venturing off with their first newborn son. They are served a meal, well wishes, and off they go. A nurse provides ice-cold washcloths to provide comfort during the difficult procedure. A surgeon checks in 3 times in 1 day to make sure she's okay. A warm shower, a cozy meal of tater tot hot dish, you can tell it's Minnesota, and conversation with family after a long day at the hospital. A doorbell rings and a kind delivery man hands them a meal gifted by a coworker of ribs and potatoes and kale salad after a day of ultrasounds and pokes and questions. A bouquet of flowers arrives on a bone-chilling day of hospital visits to greet them home. A neighbor snow blows the driveway during a blizzard to make sure they can get out when needed. A little neighborhood girl pulls Nora on a sled while mom watches from the window. And a great-grandma takes her swimming as the snow falls outside to help fill the long days of waiting. New lighting installed and closet doors are hung in the home. Stories, songs, and hide-and-seek are played by all. I still search for words to say to make this right or explain. I struggle and still search. Perhaps there are no words, just simply love. Life experience tells us that there will be ups and downs, peaks and valleys. Our culture beckons us to go and try to go from one peak to the next. You only go around once in life. Grab for all the gusto you can, is what we're told. But it's the good news of the gospel that proclaims that the awesome power and majesty of God are seen and experienced in the one who lights the way for us and who remembers and remains present with us even in the deepest, darkest days of our lives, wherever our journey takes us. Just simply love. Amen.